When it comes to personal data, storage raises a different kind of challenge. Increasingly, and because of the way the internet works, our personal information is being collected, processed, and held by companies who are based in many different countries. But the laws governing how our data are handled in different countries aren't the same, and knowing who can and can't access that information becomes very confusing. Timandra Harkness is a journalist and she specialises in big data. She's writing a book all about it. Timandra, what's the scale of this and what's the evidence that there is actually a problem here?
Well, I think I'm going to refer back to what Sue Daly said about it's not just about the volume of data, it's actually about the fact that you can link different things together. And I think this is a large part of the problem that companies or any kind of organisation, it could be charities, it could be government agencies, who want to know stuff about us as individuals, have access to a lot of different sources of data about us. So they can put together something that we've voluntarily given them. We might have registered on their site or ordered something online. They can put that together with maybe our social media posts or information that they've got from our credit card records, perhaps. It's very hard to say how much any individual company or organisation will know about you.
What about the issue that worries some people, though, which is they give this data to a company. If you give a company in the UK something, then you know that they're bound by UK legislation. But people are finding that they give data to a company, an online presence, but because they're based in another country, they find they're actually subject to the laws of that country, not our own country.
Well, that is true. And obviously, a lot of companies that we routinely use, maybe as our web providers or to do web searches, are actually based in America or elsewhere. And so we don't even know what laws they're bound by. But I would say the problem starts a bit further back. I mean, how many of us actually read the conditions before we hand over our data? We tend to be rather blindly trusting.
Stay there. We'll come back to you in just a second. But let's put what you were saying to the test and find out how easy it is for information held by companies and other organisations to fall into the wrong hands. Rosalind Davis went to an interactive art exhibition showcasing this called Data Shadow.
I'm outside a blue shipping container in the middle of Cambridge as part of the Festival of Ideas. It's an art installation by Mark Farid, who joins me now to explain what it's all about.
So it's essentially about data privacy, but for me, the lack of ownership you have over your own data.
Can you explain the process? What are you actually doing here?
You join our Wi-Fi and then a captive portal pops up which asks you to enter your iCloud details to verify that you are the owner of the phone. And then at that point we take all of the information from your mobile phone.
What's different to this than using a normal Wi-Fi hotspot?
Essentially nothing. This is a normal Wi-Fi hotspot. We've just rigged it so we can do this. But the piece of equipment that we've rigged it with cost £100 off the internet that anyone can buy.
What you're doing here today, accessing the data, could be done by anybody if they wanted to.
Completely so. So if you ever joined free public Wi-Fi before, the equipment that we're using tricks your phone into believing that we are one of those Wi-Fis, automatically connects to it. And then at that point, we can be tracking what you're doing in real time on your phone.
Well, that sounds quite scary. Can we go inside? Can I give it a go?
Of course you can.
I'm entering a completely black room. Mine's not working, so we'll go through the same process, but with Mark's data.
So I will log in using my information.
We've connected Mark's phone up to the data shadow, and I'm walking through another door into a white room this time.
If you stand just there in the middle.
Okay, so I'm in the middle of the room. And on one wall in front of me is a picture of somebody in boxer shorts. Behind me is text. Mark, where have these letters come from?
Those letters are 1,000 characters of my most recent text message or messages. And then on the right-hand side, you'll see that we've taken 64 images off my mobile phone that were first sent by text message, then WhatsApp, and then generic pictures on the phone.
When you first did this, were you surprised by what you saw?
Yeah, there were lots of photos of ex-girlfriends that I thought I deleted. People saw a lot of explicit photos of myself.
What happens next? Do I get to leave?
So you exit through this door.
And that was the door shutting behind us and deleting all the data that they've collected.
Was it the girlfriends he deleted or was it the data?
Maybe it was both. Or he thought he had, at least. So it seems anyone with the right technology could access a lot of personal information. Timandra, is there anything we can do to keep our data private?
Well, there's quite a lot we can do technologically. I'm not a tech expert, but I do keep an eye on this. Edward Snowden, oddly, has just given an interview to The Intercept, making some specific suggestions, and they are things like you can use Tor as a browser, which makes it much harder to track where you're going and what you're looking at. You can encrypt everything on your phone and your laptop. You can encrypt your messages end-to-end. There are apps you can use for that. But he also has some more general advice, which I would echo, which is you be a bit selective about what you share with whom. You can segment your life, is his phrase. You don't have to tell everybody everything. Why would you enter your iCloud details to some pop-up box from a Wi-Fi? Why would anybody do that?
I guess you're right, but it just, you know, when you just really want some free internet, it's hard, you know, it's not sensible, but it's hard not to do it, isn't it? Are there any options being developed, maybe commercially or politically, that could help us manage our personal data differently in the future, other than the things we can do personally?
Well, I think that's the key. I mean, there are definitely some people saying, look, we need a whole different model for this. We need to think that our data is ours to control. And if we want to trust somebody with it, that should be an act of trust. That, you know, I will trust you with this, but not necessarily with that. And there are things like the blockchain, the technology that underlies Bitcoin, is quite good for this because you can encrypt things and then select who you're going to share your keys with. There's a company called MyDex who are developing a whole new model of data storage, which would be very secure. And you could give, again, very specific consent to people to use certain parts of your data for certain purposes. But the other side of that is we do need to think differently about it politically. We need to actually value privacy and say, never mind, nothing to hide, nothing to fear. I always say, if you've got nothing to hide, you haven't really lived. You don't have to be doing anything illegal or harmful to anybody else to think privacy is really important, and you can't have a free society without privacy.
So after doing all this research, have you done anything differently yourself?
I am actually doing certain things differently. A lot of stuff I'm leaving for now because it's quite interesting to just be conscious of what's happening as I write the book. So, for example, I went and looked at a website of a company that all our political parties use to keep track of their contacts and, you know, keep an eye on what they should be using to try and campaign to you. So I look at this company's website, and for the next 3 weeks, their tweet appears at the top of my Twitter feed. And I haven't registered with them. I haven't given them any information consciously, but there they are. I'm definitely doing things like I'm not downloading apps that want to know my location details on my phone. Why do they need to know where I've been? I'm definitely more selective about registering and letting people share my data.
Got a tweet here from Ed Wilson to Mandarin. He says, at Naked Scientist, surely the triumph of big data is knowing that he says, surely the triumph of big data is how many times you get adverts for the very thing you've just bought online. But it reminds me of something, which is that I have now begun to foil so many birthday surprises because I share an internet connection with my wife and my other members of my family. So I know what I've got for Christmas or for my birthday, because up come all these adverts for these things. And I think, well, I haven't been looking at that. Why is this suddenly appearing on my computer?
Well, you definitely need to be using some anonymous browsing technique then, like Tor, and probably turning off adverts. In fact, and that's another thing Edward Snowden recommends is using ad blockers. But this is exactly it. I think big data tries to aggregate everything, put everything together. Actually, in real life, we don't want to put everything together. That's exactly it. You don't want to know everything your family is thinking.
I certainly don't, but for more reasons than just a birthday. Thank you very much to Mandra Harkness, who's the author of Big Data Does Size Matter.